Hi there, and welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Cassandra Morgan, who writes as C.P. Morgan. She is an award-winning author, loves to travel for conferences and conventions, and has an insatiable interest in everything folklore and mythology. It's so great to sit down with you and talk today. I've been looking forward to this for a while. I'm glad we finally made it work.
Thank you so much.
How about we talk writing?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. When did you first start writing?
Okay, so I always ask people, is your question, when did I first start writing, or when did I first start writing for the purpose of wanting to get published?
The first one.
Okay.
I actually am going to follow up with when did you start considering yourself a writer, which is, as you know, completely different question.
It is. Yeah. It is. I come from a family of writers.
Okay.
So one of my very early memories was I didn't even know my alphabet yet. I think I was 3, maybe 4, something like that. And I just typed out this like gobbledygook on my uncle's typewriter, and then I ripped the paper out, and then I ran into the other room and made the grown-ups listen to the story that I had just quote-unquote written. So I've been writing and making up stories since I was very little. My grandmother used to write for a women's literary magazine to bring in extra income for the family. My grandfather was a pastor and a farmer. So, and they had 5 children. Sometimes
need a little bit of extra.
And then my mother hasn't ever really written or published anything, but a lot of kids have memories of their parents reading them stories at night. My mom didn't read us books. She would tell us stories.
Okay.
So all the lights would be off. We'd be completely tucked into bed, and she'd be sitting on the edge of the bed in the dark, and she would make up these stories and tell us these stories. So, I've been writing and making up stories since I was very small.
That's one thing I think that we have sort of, I don't want to say lost, but we don't do as much as we used to with the oral storytelling,
oral.
I mean, it's one of the things that makes us human, and it's great to hear that she did that for you. Is she still kind of making up stories like that, or?
Well, we're all grown up now, so I don't.
You still listen to stories when you're grown up, right?
Oh, yeah,
I still
love
them.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that your grandmother wrote for the literary magazine for extra income. That's like practically unheard of now.
Yes. That's
making an income writing. What?
Yeah.
You started really early. When did you actually consider yourself a writer?
So I don't know if there was like a very specific time where I was like, I am a writer, because to me, if you write, you are a writer. Mm-hmm. So I think there's also a difference between like a cook and a chef. Like, if you cook food, then you are a cook, which is very different from being a chef, which is somebody who has educated themselves and has gone to school, and they're trying to do that thing for a living,
right?
So being a writer is somebody who writes. Now, being an author and making a career from my writing, I started that probably around 2010 is when I started working on my first book. And then somewhere between 2012 and 2014 is when I published that first book, that kind of catalyst of everything.
And then it took off from there.
Yeah.
I love it. And since you wrote that first book, how have you evolved as an author? How have you changed, your process, your voice, that kind of thing?
It's funny you say that, because I was going through boxes a number of months ago. We just had a baby, and I had to clean out. The storage room is now the nursery. And I was going through these boxes, and I found a folder full of stuff that I had written when I was a teenager. And I'm reading it, and I'm like, this is amazing. Some of the content of the stuff was like a little bit cringe, but like the structure of the sentences and the words that I chose to use at like 13, 14 years old, I'm like, this is really good. Why don't I write like this anymore? So I think my style has evolved more to be more relatable versus, I think, as an angsty teenager, some of those things were coming across as maybe more poetic,
right?
Maybe a little bit more purple prose.
Do you think you were in like a copycat phase, like a lot of authors go through, where you have the other authors that you really look up to, their work that you respect, and you sort of, emanate that, that style and you work off of that style until you kind of find your own voice? Is that kind of what it was? Or was
probably,
that authentic Cassandra?
I think maybe a combination of both. Like, okay. I probably did, because I think everybody does.
Right.
I think that even every single person's uniqueness is still a combination of all of their experiences in the world, all of the musical artists that they like and the poets that they like and the TV shows that they like and the people that they surround themselves with and things like that. So those combinations of things still create a unique individual. But I think to say that we are not influenced by those things, whether you're 13 years old or 43 years old, you know,
right.
it is, I don't think that's true. I think you are influenced by those things. So maybe I was more influenced as a teenager, definitely, because I was certainly in my Lord of the Rings Narnia phase at that time. And also my...
Is that a phase that ever ends, though?
True. I was also in a big Shakespeare phase then, too. So if you can imagine the combination of, like...
Did you have a lot of wherefore and art thous and...
Not quite like that. It's more the tragedy aspect of things. Again, we're talking 13, 14 years old. We were all angsty at one time, let's be honest.
Where it sounds a lot better and a lot more mature than what I was writing at a young age. I was doing, like, StarCraft, the computer game, you know, fan fiction and, like, romances between different people and come a long way.
Hey, don't sell fan fiction short. A lot of people give fan fiction a very bad rap. Mm-hmm. I think fan fiction, for the purposes of growing your craft and saying, like, hey, I want to work on developing this piece. I want to get better at writing present tense. Mm-hmm. I want to get better at writing a flat character arc. So I'm going to use a world and I'm going to use characters that are already established, and I don't have to think about that part of it. And I can just focus on getting better at this thing. I think fan fiction is an incredible tool, and anybody that tries to poo-poo on it, I say that, well, you know, maybe that you just need to grow your craft a little bit more using it. So
I've reread it, like you said, you read your stuff, and it's awesome. I love it. I have a binder full of it, and I had pictures that I drew along with it.
Oh, that's
great. You know, I've definitely improved quite a bit since then, and my handwriting was absolutely atrocious.
Yeah,
still
yeah.
is, but it was even worse then. But it was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot from
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the content of my stuff wasn't cringe.
Right,
the content was still very cringe. But yeah,
and it's you know, all practice is good practice
yes.
when it comes to writing.
Absolutely.
I mean, even if it's something that you throw away right away, I mean, you're still learning something, if not
yeah.
by learning that, oh, this is horrible, I shouldn't try this again.
Yeah. Oh, I have so many, like, short stories and, like, started novels and things like that that I really haven't published any sci-fi stuff, but I have all these little, like, pieces of sci-fi stuff that I play with, and then I get to a point and I'm like, I don't know enough about this thing to keep this going.
Next.
We'll put this on the back burner. So I now know what I don't know to make it better. But
as far as you said you've written some sci-fi, but you don't publish sci-fi. It's not your bag. I love it. What can readers expect from your work? What kind of things do you write about?
I started with writing young adult fantasy. I think a lot of authors, not everybody, but I think a lot of authors find their footing in some form of fantasy. And I found mine in young adult fantasy. It was very much an escape for me as a child, so it made sense that was my first thing. And again, a lot of influences from Tolkien and Lewis and, you know, all that world building that goes along with that. And then from there, I branched out into mystery novels, but they're not like your traditional mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an idea for a story, and I initially started to write it for me. And it was, I want to take all of the things that I love and just make a story about it. So I love history. I love conspiracy theories and secret societies. I love antiques. I love having the ability to use your body to fight, but choosing most of the time to use your brain to solve things, but still having that ability if it needs be. And cats, which that's something you and I can get into later. I am a certified crazy cat lady. So I wrote this series, which is about a older woman whose father has passed away. She inherits his antique shop. She is a retired museum curator. And so she lost her husband a few years ago. Then she loses her father. And so it's just her and her cat now. And she moves into the apartment above the antique store to take care of her father's antique shop. And then the secret society comes, and she learns her father was part of the secret society that traveled the world neutralizing magical artifacts. What I've done is, in this series, each book takes place in a different country. Because I love traveling, and I love learning about new cultures and all the things that go along with that, and the food and the customs and things like that.
Do you pick a place beforehand and say, I want to learn about this place, I'm going to write a book about it after I go?
Yes and no. It's more about like what – so each book also centers on either cat myth, cat lore, or cat history from that country. Mm-hmm. So I have to make sure that the country actually has something to do with cats.
Okay.
So I have, I had one that was planned. It's actually the one that I'm working on now. And it takes place in Jamaica.
Ooh.
Because one of the supporting characters is Jamaican American. And so we end up going there to visit his family in book four. And Jamaica has like nothing with cats. They are not like a cat people very much at all. Okay. Like cats are like a nuisance. There's not really like there's no like myths about cats, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it's
are you working in a way? I mean, you're a writer. You're got so much freedom. I'm sure you'll find a way to work.
Yeah.
Work
oh
a
no.
Manner,
yeah. I've completely figured out what I'm doing now. It's you know the myth about cats being on ships. Kind of thing. It's good luck to have a cat on a ship. Mm-hmm. So what I do with this series is I take either some kind of myth, legend, or a piece of history, and I twist it. Again, that whole, like, I love the conspiracy theories kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I do the what if. So what if the reason that cats were considered good luck on ships is because they helped to keep the sirens away?
Okay.
And there's lots of mythology, you know, to do with the oceans and sirens and mermaids. And obviously you have like Port Royal and Captain Henry Morgan and all that stuff to do with Jamaica. So that's kind of where I've tied all that stuff
in. That's really awesome. I can't wait. That sounds like a great story. As you're working on this, and now that you are, congratulations, a first-time parent,
yes.
That does change things a little bit as a parent of a feral 5-year-old who I love to death. How has your writing and your creative work changed, if it has at all, since you become a mom?
Creativity, writing, what are these words that you're speaking to? I don't understand. No, so before we found out that we were having a baby, which was a complete surprise, wasn't supposed to be able to have babies, and then poof, surprise.
The human body is an amazing
thing. I know, yeah. My doctors are still like, I don't know how this happened. Anyways, so I had like plans for 2024, mm-hmm. and I was going to be like, great, my author career is going great. I had all these plans set up. I had all these releases of like all these books and stuff. I had deadlines and stuff. I had things set up with my cover designers and my editors and all these things. And I had all these like new conferences and conventions and things like that I was going to do. I had 2024 planned like down to the week of what I was going
to
do.
And then you had to throw it all away, didn't you?
And then it all went out the window. So I recognize that I am very privileged in that my husband works and that I get to be a stay-at-home mom, and I do not have to bring in any income. The goal was that the income that I was going to bring in for my writing business was going to be able to, over the next 2 years, so 2024, 2025, maybe into 2026, was going to support our household a little bit more, and that my husband's income that we typically could, because we own an IT business that we were bringing home, that some of that money would then get turned around and get funneled back into the IT business. So that's not happening.
Right.
So
it will, though. Give it time.
It will. So right now, I keep telling myself that this is a season. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it will. This is a season in my life, and things didn't pan out the way that I thought they were going to, but that doesn't mean that they never will. Mm-hmm. And so I am staying on top of, to the best of my ability, with the trends that are going on in the marketing world and the business writing world and things like that, and trying to at least stay in the know so I don't have to completely start over. And then I'm getting little bits of writing in where I can.
Right. Wherever and however.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So little one is 7 months old now, so she's not quite as dependent. You know, she can sit up on her own now. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not, you know, like flopping her head all over the place anymore. So I can do things like, hey, sit here for a second while I go, you know, do this thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. As she starts to get a, you know, more and more independent kind of thing, I think I will have more of an ability to be able to carve out an hour a day, et cetera, to start writing. Right now, I'm taking the month of November, which traditionally a lot of people use to, you know, work on their novels and projects and things like that. So Sundays are my writing day.
Okay.
Right now. And then
it's really important as a parent to block out some time for yourself.
It is.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes the guilt is almost overwhelming, but you got to do it.
The way that I deal with the guilt is like, I have everything set up for my husband, who, by the way, is an incredible father. Mm-hmm. He is so hands-on, not afraid of anything. Like he's right there, does it all. He works, you know, 60 plus hours a week, you know, but when he is able to be there, he is fully present and he's a fantastic father. But the way that I deal with the guilt is I'm like, great. So I got all these bottles ready for you and I've restocked the diaper caddy for you. And you know, all these, I got an extra set of clothes laid out. And he's like, Cassie, I got this. It's okay.
Go away now.
You're fine. Just go. I've got, yeah, exactly. I've got this. But like, that's how I deal with my guilt. Right. It's like, okay, well, I know that I've left you in the best place that I can.
You mentioned seasons as a writer. How would you tell people or how would you suggest people to sort of deal with the different seasons we go through as creatives?
Right. Last year, before I found out I was having a baby, I was my grandmother's caretaker for 2 months in her final days. And I was doing the overnight shifts with her. So I would go to the nursing home at like 6, 7 o'clock at night. And then I would stay there all night long with her until like 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, go home, get a few hours of sleep, get up, go into the office. Cause at the time I was also still partially working at the IT business as well. Work there for a handful of hours and then go back and do that all over again. Probably for like 4 or 5 days a week.
Okay.
I did that. And it was hard. It was so hard. I was exhausted physically. Like, I was
not to mention, you know, emotionally.
Emotionally and exhausted and everything. Yeah. And but I kept telling myself that this is a moment in my life. But this is literally the rest of her life.
Right.
So as you're entering different seasons, and it can be as a creative or it can be as anybody, to just tell yourself this is a moment in time. Mm-hmm. You know, the Gandalf saying of, you know, do what you can with the time that is given to you kind of thing. But it's still just a moment, and it's not going to last forever. You will get through it, and then you can try to plan for the future, to the best of your ability. But yeah, it's not going to last forever,
right.
and that's okay.
And that includes the really good seasons when you're on top
for
of
sure.
the world and everything's going really well. And
that's when you also want to make sure that you've got backup plans, mm-hmm. you know, of like, well, what happens if this doesn't pan out? What happens if I do this Kickstarter for this release? And it completely flops. How am I still going to be able to fund to get that out? You need to have, you know, those backup plans
right.
to things.
That's amazing. Another one of your writing philosophies that I'm very curious about. You talked to me a little bit about it, but you have a philosophy of three hobbies,
right?
And how that relates to writing. You want to dive into that a little bit to
sure.
explain sort of how that's aided you as you become an author.
Sure. So this actually isn't specific to author stuff okay. at all. This is a concept that I heard about years ago, and I don't remember who initially coined this, so I do not want to take credit for this idea, but
mystery person A,
thank you so much for this inspiration. I appreciate you. I acknowledge you to the best of my ability. You can apply this to anything in your life, not just writing. But the three hobbies are: you should have an investment hobby, an active hobby, and a creative hobby. Your investment hobby is the thing that makes you money, plain and simple. Your active hobby is the thing that keeps you healthy. So that could be anything from, I used to fence and like fight rapier, like 17th century Princess Bride style rapier, or it could be running, it could be going to the gym, it could be, you know, just being like really honed in on your nutrition kind of thing, you know, it's that
pickleball,
you know, whatever it is. And then the creative hobby is the thing that makes you feel fulfilled. That could be writing, it could be singing, it could be volunteering somewhere. I used to be very, very involved in the animal rescues that were in this area. I did a lot of taking in the hard medical cases, the rehabilitation cases, whether that was behavioral and emotional, or physical rehabilitation, nutritional rehabilitation, that kind of thing. So I used to be very involved with that. Everybody should have three hobbies, because those are the three core things that we need as humans in today's modern society is to live: money, health, and creativity. What's cool about that, and this is what ended up happening with me, is that as the seasons of your life change and life, you know, changes, you can kind of swap those around a little bit as needed. So my investment hobby at the time, years and years and years ago, was in animal husbandry. I was in vet tech school. I have a bunch of different certifications in feline nutrition and behavior, all those things. And I tried working with veterinarians in the area as an independent behavior and nutritionist, that I would like maybe come into their practice once or twice a week. We would talk about specific cases, and then the doctors and I would put plans together to help mostly the cats, but I do know some things about dogs, but mostly cats, to maybe wean them off of certain medications, to get them onto a healthier diet so they maybe didn't have to be on a prescription diet for their entire life kind mm-hmm. of thing, you know, things like that. Nobody wanted to work with me, which as a business owner, I understand, right? Because if you're a veterinarian, patients that come in and get that prescription food every single month and they get that kidney medicine every single month, that's guaranteed monthly income, right? So as a business owner,
it's always about that, the right, bottom dollar, right?
Exactly. So as a business owner, I understand it, but that
as a human and as somebody who really cares for yeah. animals, obviously it's a completely different story.
Yeah. And so that career path was just going absolutely nowhere, and I had learned enough about the veterinary industry that I didn't really want to just be another cog in the machine. I didn't want to just be a regular registered veterinary technician kind mm-hmm. of thing. And, you know, I didn't want to be another cog in the right. machine. So I'm like, well, what else can I do? Well, my creative hobby was writing. And I've always loved writing. And I'm like, well, let me give this a try. And so what ended up happening is my investment hobby and my creative hobby kind of flip-flopped. Right. And so now I've taken my what used to be my creative hobby as writing, and I've turned it into my business. And then my investment hobby, which used to be working in animal husbandry, I then turned into my creative hobby. I don't have as much time, you know, to do that as I used to.
Right.
One with technically running two businesses, because we have my author business and my, you know, the IT business. Right. But now also with a little one, there's not as much time
You have some responsibility there, right?
A little bit. She's got to eat.
Right.
You know, again, seasons. It all comes back to the seasons. You know, eventually I'll be able to do more of that again. And it will be nice when she's older that I can share those things with my daughter, you know, and be like, hey, it's, you know, we don't always keep all the animals that we bring in. We have to be that halfway house. We have to teach them that what love is, and we have to teach them that humans are okay, and we have to get them healthy again so that they can go to their forever person and they can do their job for that person for their life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that's the concept of the three hobbies is your investment hobby. It's the thing that makes you money. And I always tell people, too, that your investment hobby may not always be something when you're first starting out that you are going to love. How many of us worked at a McDonald's or have worked in retail or something like that? And it was the absolute most miserable experience that you've had in your life. But you used it as a stepping stone, you know, to work your way up into a career of something that does make you money that you do enjoy doing. So I give the
talk. That's the dream, isn't it?
It is. I give the talk to the of the three hobbies a lot to like teenagers at schools, middle schools and high schools and stuff. So I always like to preface that with your investment hobby may not necessarily be that your first job that you have, you know, straight out of the gate. But yeah, your investment hobby, your active hobby, and then your creative hobby. As long as you have those three things in your life, you're going to be okay.
I love it. And now you're going to get discover what your daughters are going to be, right?
Yes, I am so excited. I'm so excited. I love her as a little person, and already seeing her personality come through.
There's nothing quite like it, is there?
She loves music and just like everything to do with music, and she's constantly moving. So like she's 7 months old, and I've already like got a dance studio picked out for this kid. You know, like
she's gonna have such a great time. I can see it already. Anybody who wants to sort of learn more about your writing and follow along with some of the things you're doing, is there anywhere people can find you or learn more about you?
Yeah. So I'm a little lackluster right now. You know, the baby doesn't make a whole lot of time for updating things, but you can definitely check out my stuff on Amazon. You can search Cassandra Morgan and The Kingdoms of Cartile for my young adult fantasy. That is Cartile, Cartile. And then the Silver Fox Mysteries under C.P. Morgan. There is my sweet romance, Damsel in Social Distance. And then last year, I published a gothic fairy tale horror also under C.P. Morgan.
Very cool.
So that is how the witch from Hansel and Gretel came to be. And I've got some more plans for those two. But yes, Amazon, you can look me up there. My website is AuthorCassandraMorgan.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm not too much on the X Twitter kind of thing. But yeah, definitely Facebook, Instagram. Those are the places to follow me to find out like what are my next releases? What projects am I working on? What conventions and conferences am I going to? Things like that. And the occasional cat picture.
I love it. You got to throw that in for good measure, right?
I do.
Well, it's been amazing talking to you today.
Thank you.
I look forward to everything that comes in the future for you as both a mom and as a writer, and let's keep it going.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. As a new mom, Cassandra proves that seasons come and seasons go. Sometimes the writing flows, sometimes everything seems to go exactly as planned, and other times it feels like nothing is working out and the world is against you. But from our conversation with her, you can know that that too shall pass. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now, go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.